If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. Thank you so much for your company. This is the Australian edition of TNT Radio. You are watching and listening to this on a day when the military industrial complex has given another whistleblower a massive reminder: don't mess with those wielding the real power. Do not dare uncover the truth, because we will come and garrote you. A Supreme Court judge has shown no mercy at all to military whistleblower and former defence lawyer David McBride today, despite McBride pleading guilty. And it's almost as if that meant for nothing, and telling the court he was trying to expose the allegedly corrupt top brass of the military. He wasn't there to lag on the soldiers who put their lives on the front line. He was sent today to jail for 5 years and 8 months. 5 years and 8 months. There are manslaughter convictions and convictions for killing people that don't get 5 years and 8 months. I've covered courts for 25 years. There are sentences that aren't as tough as that that apply to killing people. It is a massive sentence, which shows that under no circumstances is there discretion in Australia for whistleblowers. And when you extrapolate that to what Julian Assange is facing, if Julian Assange was facing the same judge today, he would probably get 25 years if you're going to give David McBride 5 years. Now, you can have all the noble intentions in the world, but if you tell the truth from within a government department using government documents, you are obviously dead meat. I'll cross to independent journalist Michael West very shortly, who has watched this case very closely. He's watched from close quarters today in the Supreme Court of the ACT, and he watched when this was delivered. It was followed, by the way, by a moderate uproar from those in the public gallery. They were aghast. They yelled shame. They made a heap of noise in a court that wouldn't have normally been accustomed to such noise. But when you think about the discussions prior to the sentence, we were even talking about a community service order, possibly maybe 18 months at the very maximum inside a prison. Now, bear in mind, the skeletal allegations in what David McBride handed to the ABC ended up being made public by the top brass, who said that the public needed to know. They were the ones who ran a long press conference and, based on the Brereton findings, said that the public needed to know and that these soldiers needed to go. But of course, David McBride wasn't after the scalps of soldiers. He believed that the soldiers were set up by the top brass. That was his intention all along, according to him. Now, I don't know whether you think he should have gone to jail. Maybe he should have. I'm not disputing some kind of punishment for something that he has pleaded guilty to. Not saying that, not denying that at all. But 5 years and 8 months? They must be kidding. They must be kidding. I'll try and get hold of David Shoebridge, who has been following the case and being very supportive of David from the very get-go. He is obviously angry, and he said as much outside the court a little earlier this afternoon. We'll get hold of David Shoebridge as well, and we'll talk to Michael West about what the judge said, which somehow backed up or supported that kind of sentence. Now, the New York Times has got an exclusive story which has been taken and put on the front pages of news right around the world today. It is huge. It's on the secret surveillance files held by Hamas on tens of thousands of Palestinians. You wonder who's actually controlling the Gaza Strip. Well, it is Hamas. Make no qualms about what we now know. According to the New York Times, it raises questions about whether you can differentiate between the terror group and the Palestinian population, considering the fact that the Palestinian population are told and ordered to do exactly what the Hamas regime tell them to do. And when you think about what the UN decided to do last Friday, have they just opened the door to terrorists inadvertently? I'll get to the Maverick MP, independent MP in the New South Wales Parliament, Mark Latham. He has plenty to say too on the sentence handed down today to David McBride. We'll talk about the McBride sentence, today's federal budget, anti-Semitism on campus, new bail laws to tackle domestic violence. And has Donald Trump just been sunk, or has one of his arch enemies just done him a massive favour? I wonder which way this will go. Mark Latham shortly on the program. I'll get to Daily Telegraph columnist Vicky Campion too later in the program. We'll reignite this discussion we had on the show last week about whether it's time for a baby bonus in this country again. Former Prime Minister John Howard, he must be listening or watching TNT radio, because this was a prime discussion on this program last week when we played you some audio from a podcast of Jim Chalmers, the Australian Treasurer, talking about what Peter Costello did in the early 2000s and how successful it was to have a baby bonus. He knows that if we home grow our talent, our population, it takes the pressure off housing and it enables us to reduce the number of immigrants that come into the country. It is the way to go. But he's not prepared to put in a baby bonus. John Howard says they should. And we'll talk to Vicky Campion about that. And we're in search of the latest information on the mRNA COVID vaccines today. We'll be joined by senior research scientist and author Stephanie Seneff. To talk about the toxicity trap created by COVID vaccines. Once an experimental drug, always an experimental drug. And we've learned so much more since the pandemic, and Stephanie has been right across it. So we'll catch up with her for an update. Plus, we'll take your calls. Is this an appropriate sentence for David McBride? You tell me. If you've had anything to say about David McBride, whether it's on the chat box or whether it's on emails or whether it's on the talkback lines, now's the time to have your say. Are you upset, disappointed in what was handed out to David McBride, 5 years and 8 months, or was it appropriate? Would you have expected a lot less? There were legal gurus on the ABC this morning talking about community service orders for such a guilty plea. And it's almost as if he shouldn't have pleaded guilty. He should have taken it to a jury. Just inexplicable. And when you think about what whistleblowers go through to uncover what they deem to be the truth, what they deem, rightly or wrongly, to be appropriate to expose, wow. And then to be lumped with almost 6 years in jail after all of that process. Unbelievable. If you'd like to call, give us a call from the United States or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. I wonder what Julian Assange thinks that he's now heard the verdict. It's very early in the morning at Belmarsh Prison where he's being held. He would have got that news in the last half hour. I wonder what he thinks of the sentence handed out to David McBride. You can call in from the UK, by the way, 033-0024-1026, or from Australia and New Zealand, which is where this judge resides, 1-800-670-310. Was it an appropriate sentence? If you just want to say yes or no, you can certainly do that on our talkback lines. Let's get into this. You're with Chris Smith, broadcasting live on the Global News Talk Network. This is TNT Radio.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'll get to Michael West, who was in the court watching the sentence handed down to David McBride very, very shortly on the program, but to the Middle East now. And I don't care where you stand on what's unfolding in Gaza. This is not a black and white issue. It's not a black and white conflict. Nowhere near it. There is not one culprit in this war. There is not one righteous side either. There simply is not. And to me, that grey truth was highlighted on Friday when 143 member countries of the United Nations voted to recognise Palestine as an official observer member of the UN? Will they become a fully ratified member? That would be the next step. The US voted against the motion. Australia voted for it. But have the majority of nations in the world just allowed the terrorist inside the tent? Well, the Israeli ambassador certainly thinks so.
This day will go down in infamy. The UN, an organization that was established in the aftermath of the systematic murder of 6 million Jews, pays no heed to its founding charter and is advancing another genocidal regime that threatens the existence of the Jewish people. And I want the entire world to remember this moment, to remember this immoral act.
So for Israel, and in the eyes of callers that I've had on this program, not all of them, some of them, Palestine is Hamas. Palestinians are Hamas disciples. And what the world has just done is to legitimize a terror organization whose troops are very much within the population of the Palestinian people. If you don't think that many Palestinians worship Hamas and are willing to carry out acts of terror on their behalf, you're either delusional or very much invested in the Palestinian side of the history. Now, I'm not suggesting all Palestinians are on the side of Hamas. Certainly not. We've actually heard from Palestinians in the Gaza Strip being interviewed by international press agencies saying that they hate Hamas. There is that element of sentiment on the ground, no doubt. But today we've heard about the power Hamas wields over the Palestinian people. This is gaining front page placement right across the world. The New York Times is running a story tonight claiming that for 4 years, Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar has overseen a secret police force in Gaza that conducted surveillance on everyday Palestinians and built files on you and those who questioned the government. The Times says it's confirmed this via intelligence officials and a trove of internal documents they reviewed. Now, the unit known as the General Security Service relied on a network of Gaza informants, some of whom reported their own neighbours to the police. The Times says people landed in security files for attending protests. That's it. Or publicly criticising Hamas. In some cases, the records suggest that the authorities followed people to see if they were carrying on romantic relationships outside of their marriage. We know that Hamas has long run an oppressive system of governance in Gaza. That's no big surprise. And even during this conflict, Hamas has not hidden its tight hold on the Palestinian people. Here's Ismail Haniyeh, who's the senior political leader of Hamas, ordering Palestinians to form protest groups during Ramadan.
This is a call to our people in Jerusalem and West Bank and the occupied areas inside Israel to march toward Al-Aqsa Mosque from the first day of the holy month of Ramadan, in individuals and in groups, to pray and stay in it and to break the siege of it. We address the esteemed resistance forces in our nations who are now fighting their battle on many fronts in supporting of their brothers in Gaza to intensify their battle for Al-Aqsa. Jerusalem is the compass of this blessed axis, and on the way to it, martyrs are made.
Martyrs are made. That's not just an order. That encourages Palestinians to become martyrs for the cause. And even in recent months, Hamas has not let up in rallying all Palestinians to the military cause.
It is the duty of the Arab and the Islamic world and the duty of the brotherly countries neighboring occupied Palestine to take the initiative to break the conspiracy to starve the northern Gaza Strip.
The New York Times says a 62-slide presentation on the activities of the General Security Service, delivered only weeks before the October 7 attack on Israel, reveals the degree to which the largely unknown unit penetrated the lives of Palestinians. The documents show that Hamas security officials trailed journalists and people they suspected of immoral behaviour. Agents got criticism removed from social media and discussed ways to defame political adversaries. Now, in terms of their authenticity, which I know you'd ask the question immediately as to how authentic it was, the Times says it procured the documents from Israeli officials who said they'd been seized in raids in Gaza. Before you jump to a conclusion, Times reporters say they then interviewed people who were named in the files. Those people recounted key events, confirmed biological and biographical information, and described interactions with authorities that aligned with those secret files. Again, if Palestinians are acting in lockstep with Hamas in terms of doctrine, in terms of taking orders, which they have throughout this conflict, hasn't the UN just opened the door to terrorism? This doesn't mean the Palestinians don't deserve the world's support. They deserve most of it. It doesn't mean their plight is their own fault either. You can do quite strange things at the end of a barrel of a gun. But until the umbilical cord is cut between Hamas and the Palestinian people, should they not be considered one in the same? Fair question. This is TNT Radio.
Johnny Vedmore, TNT.
The narrative has officially changed. Years after the Nazi-like medical experimentation was enacted upon the entire world, the people responsible for murdering and injuring millions worldwide admitting that they were injecting the masses with dangerous experimental drugs. AstraZeneca, the New York Times, Chris Cuomo, are all pretending to show contrition, but they don't care about the many people they murdered. They did not even act out of hubris. They acted out of greed and with an agenda. Yes, they did. They were involved with injecting the naive and trusting with poison, and then they watched people struggle for breath, collapse, and die worldwide.
Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
About to hear
today's News Talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country's all about.
TNT Radio.
Okay, a couple of quick comments from our chat box on tntradio.live. Irving says, demand an immediate pardon for David McBride. Bombard the Attorney General as well, he's saying. Terry writes, David McBride reported the facts of crimes and has been convicted for the possibility of a security breach. That hasn't happened. Another example of our corrupt court system. Well, as I say, I heard a legal commentator this morning discuss what could be the likely sentence for former defence lawyer David McBride. As you know, McBride pleaded guilty to stealing and disclosing sensitive classified military information to ABC journalists. McBride himself has said to me on this program, what that comes out of defence is not classified. This commentator spoke in terms of a community service order or an 18-month period of incarceration. That was certainly in the ballpark of most expectations, including my own. But cop this. Whistleblower David McBride has been jailed for 5 years and 8 months by Supreme Court Justice David Mossop. His non-parole period, it is a bit better, obviously, with a period of 27 months, still 2 years and 3 months. That is still one hell of a sentence. Let's bring in Michael West from Michael West Media, who was in the court today and has been on previous hearings. And let's hear why the sentence was that tough. Michael West, welcome back to TNT Radio.
Thanks, Chris.
Firstly, for those who are listening or watching with much less knowledge of what this is all about, explain to our audience what David McBride was attempting to do.
Well, really, it's quite boring. It's not war crimes. They sexed it up, obviously, with the leaked information. But he was an army lawyer, SAS lawyer, who felt that the system of the legal protocols weren't being followed. It was all about PR in the ADF, in the Defence Force, rather than justice. So he made a number of complaints. He went through the right channels. He went to the Inspector General, the ADF, etc. He even went to the Federal Police saying, look, you know, these things are being covered up. There's not proper legal process being followed, da-da-da. In fact, he was defending people who he thought were unjustly prosecuted. The war crime stuff was the flip side of it in the documents that were leaked. But effectively,
I've read criticisms of David McBride, Michael West, that have said, "Well, why didn't he just go to the right channels and do the official protest and supply what he had or what he knew?" But as you say, he tried on a number of occasions to raise this, right?
Tried for years. Yeah.
Yeah.
He tried.
Okay, as it turned out, he was bitterly disappointed with what the... Sorry, go on, Michael.
Well, what he felt, Chris, was that he knew, and this came out in the sentencing hearing last week, he knew that he wasn't obeying orders. He knew that he was technically stealing classified documents and communicating them to the media. He knew that, accepted that, but he felt that the public interest was so strong that as a lawyer, he had a duty to the court, to the law, to the truth, to the public interest. This all came out in his evidence. And so therefore, he felt that he would be vindicated when the things which he had brought to light were investigated. But they were never investigated. And the people responsible for the 39 unlawful killings of Afghan civilians during the war, none of that has been, well, we've seen defamation trials of Ben Robert Smith, but we've never seen proper accountability from the Army command. And this just furthers that. They've jailed the whistleblower. They've jailed the whistleblower for 5 years and 8 months, non-paroles, you know, 2 years and 3 months. But... you know, they've jailed the whistleblower. Well, the guy's responsible for the war crime and the army command. In an army, you have a command structure and the commanding officer is responsible all the way up to the defence minister. And they're all running around with their medals on, not taking any responsibility for these war crimes. And David, the whistleblower, who said that the system of justice is rotten in the ADF, he's the one going to jail. He's the one that got pinned with criminal charges.
And the further irony, highly unjust, the further irony is he pleads guilty. He goes to these various sources for years, various agencies for years, to try and seek some kind of investigation. And the irony is that the body of what he was trying to raise was then announced to the world by the head of the ADF in a press conference following the Brereton inquiry as something that the public in Australia needed to know.
Well, absolutely. I think there's some central problems with this, that he was denied last November a defence. His defence was public interest, and that came out ironically in the sentencing hearing last Monday. So one of the most fundamental principles of justice is that you should be able to have your say in court. And he could not. He wasn't allowed to defend himself, so the proceedings were cut short. And he was forced to plead guilty, to fall on the mercy of the court, to fall on the mercy of one guy, Justice David Mossop. And so it's highly unjust. He was denied the right to a defence. So it will be appealed, and it will be appealed because there are higher legal principles involved here. Mossop's judgment assumed that a sort of pre-Nuremberg thing, that the Nuremberg trials following the Second World War where the Nazis were convicted of war crimes. And they all just said, look, we're just following orders, and yes, they were. But the fact is, that was not good enough. There were higher principles of public interest then involved. People were being unlawfully killed by the millions. So, you know... this winds back the clock to Nuremberg, and that principle can't prevail, because what happens if there's some terrible scandal in the military, which there are all the time? There are scandals in any institution. That's why whistleblowers need to be protected, because if you can't go through the right channels and blow the whistle on, imagine if there was like rapes and murders in the ADF, you know, of anybody, and you're a lawyer and you felt that, you know, I mean, would you be expected to obey orders? So this is going to be appealed. I hear also from people associated with the legal team that it will be appealed because that principle can't stand. You can't have an institution, even if it's the army, where you blindly obey orders and do the wrong thing, which might, you know, lead to, you know, cover up war crimes effectively. You can't cover up war crimes. It's just wrong. And that's the principle at stake here. So I'd expect an appeal to the full bench of the Supreme Court of the ACT, so it's not just one bloke hearing it. And then if that fails, I'd expect, I don't know how he's going to fund it. I'm sure that he'll get some public interest funding on this because it's so fundamental to Australia's system of justice. He will appeal, seek leave to appeal to the High Court, I'd imagine, if he's unsuccessful before the full bench.
I want to talk to you about what the judge said, and I want to talk to you about what the reaction was like in the court in just 1 second. I've got to get a news update, Michael West. We'll come back with you in just 1 second. This is TNT.
What brings you here?
News entirely.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. There's outrage in Australia, where a former military lawyer who helped expose Australian war crimes in the Middle East has been thrown in jail.
I may have broken the law, but I did not break my oath to the Australian people.
OpenAI has launched a new flagship model that can reason across audio, vision and text in real time. And the US State Department has expressed its doubts that Israel is capable of completely eradicating Hamas.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
David McBride may already be at his prison, the prison where they have allocated his stay. It may be that he's there already. It is 5 years and 8 months. Quite an extraordinary sentence, I would have thought, especially given the fact that he tried to go through various agencies to bring what he had in his hands forward. He tried on many occasions. He pleaded guilty. And there was also some evidence, Michael West, that he was suffering from a great deal of mental stress. And even the judge recognised that, right?
Yes, the judge took that into account and discounted the sentence in his judgment by recognising that, and also discounted the sentence by, I think, 10% in recognition of David pleading guilty. So these things were taken into account. But the problem, I think, is it's the relative or the comparative justice issue, Chris. You know, I wrote a story after the decision today pointing out the PwC had stolen government documents. They were working for the government, getting paid as consultants to get the new tax laws, multinational tax avoidance laws going. And yep. They leaked that to multinational clients, such as Google and so forth. And those clients were able to guard Australia as a result of the advice, confidential advice they were given. So these guys stole documents for private gain of the partners who would make money by selling these state secrets. David stole documents in the public interest and he sought no yeah. financial gain by doing it. So people will look at these comparative things, and not just these ones, but many others, and they will go, well, hang on, this guy's just got the raw prawn here. Why none of the people who murdered civilians in Afghanistan, where are they? And they will go, well, hang on, this guy's just got the raw prawn here. Why none of the people who murdered civilians in Afghanistan, where are their trials? Where's the accountability of people in all this? Just one guy. It's this deterrent thing. And the judge mentioned this in his judgment too. general deterrence, it's called. In other words, part of the reason for a harsh sentence is to make sure nobody does it again. That was a factor.
It's interesting that you say all of that. It just makes you wonder what he would have got if there were no mitigating circumstances like a plea of guilty or a mental problem as well. They probably would have whacked him with 10 years. It's just extraordinary. Okay, the reaction immediately. What happened in the courtroom?
Oh, well, there was dismay, obviously, because it was a higher sentence or a harsher sentence than people thought David would receive. But it wasn't way out of whack, you know. I mean, the expectations before that, of course, were that, you know, he could go for 50 years because those were the maximum penalties. There was dismay about it because it did seem pretty harsh. Non-parole is 2 years and 3 months. So in terms of the, I mean, he's already, as you pointed out previously for the news break, he's already done 5.5 years or more of hard time anyway, awaiting the hangman's noose with a family, with young daughters, and just sitting there going, am I going to go to jail? And life's about expectations as much as, as it is about reality. And the harsh reality of those expectations is that that's weighed heavily on him. And there was evidence that he was diagnosed with PTSD, and also that there was some substance, you know, drinking and so on, because of the pressure of the situation he was under, feeling that his voice for justice was not being heard. And so those things were taken into account, that there was a mental issue which may have affected his judgment. But it wasn't given a lot of weight because there was a lot of pressure on him at the time, you know, trying to get this stuff out there.
Yeah, he was swaying in purgatory for the past 5 years. Now, I want to play for you something that David said to me in December when I asked him about his contemplation of life possibly in prison. Here is David McBride. Has your mind and your soul grappled with the idea of being in prison for years yet?
I've always been about getting change. And so prison, avoiding prison has never been a motivator for me. I, as long as my reputation is okay and people think I've done the right thing, I will hold my head up high.
It's interesting, Michael West. I don't know whether you agree with me, but I think if he was before a jury, they may have let him go.
I think so. I think so because... well, it would have been the just thing to do. He admitted that he'd done the wrong thing, that he'd disobeyed orders, that he'd taken these documents. He admitted that, but he said that he did it for higher purposes, and he thought at the time that he was doing the right thing, that he would be vindicated. I think it's very difficult for him. But the other thing to consider, besides the hypothetical of a public jury, Chris, is... what would have occurred if David had just, like other whistleblowers and conscientious objectors to things in corporate life as well as government life, what would happen to them if they didn't, what would have happened to David if he didn't speak up at all? What he opted to do deliberately was to run a public campaign about it and to go as public and as hard as possible. And my view is, you know, I've dealt with whistleblowers for many years and I've seen the way... It would have been better if the stuff had been off the record given to the ABC. They're not happy with the way the ABC treated it. I don't think they were unprofessional in their journalism about it, but they didn't look after him. And as a journalist, I've been dealing with whistleblowers for years. And as a journalist, you have to look after. And Richard Boyle hasn't been looked after either, the ATO whistleblower for small business. You've got to look after
your sources.
So him, that's right. So I think he was poorly advised going on record, and the stuff should have been leaked by way of background, and they should have looked after him, you know, because it is a public interest issue. This shone the light on what was going on, and if you don't shine a light on these things, they get worse. It's as simple as that. It's just normal human character, that things will get worse if you can operate in the shadow of, you know, anonymity and darkness, you know.
Thank you so much for that report and that analysis, Michael West. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Chris. Cheers, mate.
Good on you. Michael West from Michael West Media, who's been following this for quite some time. You heard not only his report of what occurred and why it occurred, what the judge has said, but also his views about the severity of the sentence. Inexplicable. Inexplicable. And when you consider that he was given discounts on those various factors we have just enunciated, you just wonder what he would have got if the judge had nothing to discount. I'm going to get one of the first political reactions to this sentence right after a break. I'll do that with independent MP in New South Wales, Mark Latham. Back in a second on TNT.
I was a quarterback at Hardaway High School. College first round draft pick, on and off the field. We were taught to not show any signs of weakness. During the football season, I would stop eating. But I didn't know I was depressed. I thought that something was wrong with me. For 20 plus years was physical, physical, physical. We didn't have any education behind what mental health was. I started to learn it starts here first. If this is together, I'll be better as a father, as a man, and as a husband. Put the importance on your mental health. I'm not scared to talk about it anymore. The first tool is therapy. The second one is positive self-talk. And then journaling, putting your thoughts on paper. We have to redefine what being a strong man is and heal. Love your mind.
Meet Norm. He lives with anxiety, but with the help of this latest innovation from Be Normal, he can be normal, just like everyone else. With the swipe of a finger, you can project happiness, confidence, machismo. Why settle for being real when you can be normal? The Normal Maker. New from Be Normal.
This item doesn't really work because there's no such thing as normal. We're all different. What we like, how our brains work. In fact, 1 in 5 of us live with mental illness. Don't filter who you are. Start by talking to someone you trust. And remember, there is no normal.
This is The Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk. TNT Radio.
If you have just walked in, you've just joined us, you've just switched on, you've buttoned on, David McBride, who was very close to TNT Radio in many ways as a guest and as a commentator, keeping everyone up to date with how his legal case was going, has been sentenced to 5 years and 8 months for those offences that he pleaded guilty to related to his time as a defence lawyer and handing those documents on to the ABC. A couple of quick comments on the chat line or the chat box on tntradio.live. Chug says, Assange has been held without a charge for over a decade. There are no laws, just rich man's laws selectively enforced. Mike writes, we need people speaking up as there are a lot of silent people not exposing corruption in government departments, for example, and many more comments as well. Let's go to Mark Latham, independent MP in the New South Wales Parliament. Mark Latham, welcome back to TNT.
Thanks very much, Chris.
David McBride, I'm not too sure whether it was something that came up before the Parliament in New South Wales, obviously not, but it's been swaying around for about 5 years now. He goes down 5 years and 8 months. What's your reaction?
Well, it's going to have a chilling impact on whistleblowers. There is an advantage in the public interest to have those in positions with documents available to them to out wrongdoing in the public interest. Whistleblowers traditionally in Australia don't get a lot of protection. We don't have very strong laws about whistleblowers around the Commonwealth. So it's going to have a chilling impact. Who'll be the next whistleblower to come forward, knowing that this can be the consequence, nearly 6 years sentence in jail. But on the flip side, I've got to say, I'm no great fan of dobbing in our special forces in Afghanistan, young men trained to do a job, young men sent to do a job that no journalist would do that I know of. And in the theatre of war, sometimes having to take matters into their own hands. And it's been a very divisive process through the Breton Report and the court case with Ben Robert Smith, the divisions with his former colleagues. So I'm no great fan of that. So I think there's arguments on both sides of the ledger, but most people will be shocked by the severity of the sentence.
Yeah, the severity of the sentence. Now, bear in mind, it is 27 months non-parole, so he may be able to get out after 2.5 years. We will see. Michael West says he will appeal, and that could change things as well. There could be a different sentence applied down the track. But as you say, it not only sends a lesson to those who might consider taking internal documents within a government department and expose them, but boy, oh boy, you'd be a very, very brave person to consider yourself a whistleblower from here on in.
Well, he was a military lawyer there with the army and gave these documents to the ABC. So ethically, should a lawyer do that? Should a military official do that? There is a wrongdoing there, and he pleaded guilty. The only question is about the sentence, but as you say, the non-parole period is not excessive, really. There's an appeal, and hopefully the full sentence will come down and the non-parole will remain reasonable.
So the federal budget will, of course, be splashed over most of our papers tomorrow. We'll get our 8-page spreads from page 1 to page 8. Miraculously, I don't get this. Is this the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, is this the first time that we've actually had the numbers related to a surplus delivered before the budget has been delivered? I think it is, isn't it?
It'd be one of the few times, but for a Labor government, they get pretty excited about the fact that rare in history they're delivering a surplus, so they can't wait to get it out there, Chris. I suppose you can't blame them at that level. It's so rare to Labor, they can't contain their excitement and their ability to leak it out into the media, so that's what's happened. Yeah. But in the out years, you know, beyond the next financial year, we go back into deficit and you look at the spending increases, real spending increases, so above the CPI by Labor, they're of the order of 5%. You know, an avalanche of spending on childcare, aged care, health, the NDIS, which is kind of open-ended spending. So they actually haven't got spending under control. They've got a bit of a revenue bonus there that puts the budget temporarily into surplus. And the other debate really out there preemptively is about the inflation rate. Chalmers has got Treasury data saying inflation will come back between 2 and 3% by the end of the year. That's incredibly optimistic and is not shared by the Reserve Bank, who thinks it'll be closer to 4% by the end of 2024. So, you know, some of these figures can be rubbery and we'll see how they'll play out. But, yeah, we're getting a bit of Labor fiscal responsibility for 12 months, but that's it. After that, they'll be back to their big spending, big deficit ways.
Well, what do you make of Jim Chalmers describing what they're doing in terms of spending as unavoidable spending? Nothing is unavoidable.
Well, spending can be okay if you've got cost savings, but have we seen from Albanese and Chalmers any proposals for major cost savings? The NDIS is open-ended. It's open slather for all sorts of rorting and abuse. So it's out of control. Health spending's out of control. The big priority on childcare, I don't know how effective that is in lifting female labour market participation, but they spend a lot on it. And aged care, well, you know, the big aged care question is people making better provision in an ageing society for their own needs. So Labor doesn't go down the path of any of those structural reforms, any of those cost savings. So whenever they spend big, it's at the expense of the budget bottom line with no offset in terms of cost cutting.
Yeah, and given the fact that there is this amount of unavoidable spending, how can it not gas up inflation?
Well, that's right, and we're yet to see the cost of living measures, but surely if you put more money in people's pockets, they go out and spend it, particularly low-income earners, and that drives inflation. So, yeah, there's a cross-current there. If you're really worried about inflation, you wouldn't be doing handouts to people, but I think that's what will happen when we hear the Treasurer speak tonight in Canberra.
What do you think about state government? Seeing that you're from New South Wales, I wonder whether state governments could do a hell of a lot more to help people with cost of living. Like I think about the things that people simply have to pay, their utilities, for instance, their rego, their third-party insurance, all that stuff that gets their car on the road. They can't do without a car, especially if they're not, you know, going to work where their work is near a train station or a bus stop. So given all of that must spend, I wonder whether state governments can't, maybe even getting a help from federal governments, but state governments can't go, hey, listen, we're going to do a little bit of a moratorium on what you have to pay for insurance on your car, maybe a discount we're going to give you on your utility bills that you know you have to pay. There are ways of not spending money, not putting it in the pocket of someone, in other words, and therefore not spiking inflation that can help people with cost of living, isn't there?
Well, the state governments do a fair bit in terms of concessions for old age pensioners, some welfare card holders, and the pattern at state level has been handouts, vouchers. There are some 20 plus voucher handout schemes in New South Wales alone. So they've been doing a bit there, Chris. But the big one you mentioned is electricity and gas prices. And there the problem is federal and state going down the path of 100% renewable. We pay as consumers and also as taxpayers because of the huge public cost in rebuilding the electricity grid, in the backup power that's needed to keep the lights on 24/7. So if you go down the path of relying on renewables, the prices go up. Australia used to have the cheapest, most reliable power in the Western world.
Don't remind me.
Now it's among the most expensive. Albanese's promise of, what, $275 bill reduction is a public joke. So it's the big one where the policy settings have been wrong for about 15 years now on both sides of politics. And until you get some competition in the market and go back to reliable baseload power, whether that's coal, gas or nuclear, if you're relying on renewables, we're bound to pay more.
You must have had a laugh last week when they decided to release their gas strategy, whereby, you know, gas is the big transition fossil fuel that we need to rely on to keep the lights on. But for 15 years, they've done nothing, in particular Chris Bowen, they've done nothing but demonise gas.
Well, worse than that, it's very, very hard to get a gas project approved. You look at Santos in New South Wales, what they've been through is corporate torture to get their Narrabri gas project up and running in a state, Chris, where we are virtually 1% or 2% gas self-sufficient. New South Wales has basically no gas supply. Now, historians in the future will write up how did Australia, with massive resource, economic competitive advantages, throw it all away? Throw it all away on the myth of thinking that we and we have the capacity to save the planet from climate change. So these are policies of folly that'll be judged badly by history, but in the short term, they're judged badly by consumers because we're all paying more.
Yeah, it'll be the laughing stock era of history. You're not wrong. I want to talk about anti-Semitism in universities. I won't go through the various incidents related to the various universities, but gee, there are some university administrators, Mark, that like to hide under their desks. Anti-Semitism is anti-Semitism, no matter what's happening in the world.
Yeah, it's a weird public mood, isn't it? Post that Hamas terrorist attack in Israel on the 7th of October, that somehow the terrorists and the cause of Palestine seem to have a lot more support among left-wing politics than those who were attacked and slaughtered. And, of course, the traditional by what had been bipartisan support in Australia for the state of Israel. So apparently in the budget there will be an inquiry into what's happening in the higher education sector. It's a worry that young people on our campuses would be anti-Semitic. It's a worry, I think, that Australia voted at the UN for the recognition of Palestine, which rewards the terrorists on the 7th of October, because that's what they were after. So the federal government can have their inquiry, but better foreign policy perhaps would reduce the temperature of this debate in Australia instead of some of the horrific things we're seeing and hearing on our university campuses.
See, that's a really interesting point about what happened at the UN on Friday. It does kind of prove, doesn't it, that if you commit a lot of atrocity, if you rape a lot of women, if you do things that people can't even talk about because they're that atrocious, you can actually get what you aim to get, which is a seat in the United Nations.
Yeah, I remember in the weeks following the 7th of October reading some material online from those who've been through these debates before saying, you just watch what happens. You just watch how the left-wing narrative turns against Israel and in favour of Palestine. And it's almost like they will airbrush the 7th of October out of history. And it was a wise prediction, an unfortunately wise prediction as to what's gone on. And it's hard to believe there could be any sympathy and reward for the terrorists, particularly when we see how the global community united after 9/11 in the United States to say zero tolerance of terrorism. No one ever thought of giving succor or sympathy or recognition to Al-Qaeda, but this is the equivalent now of what's happened with this UN vote.
I want to talk about New South Wales bail laws, and I wonder whether a lot of thought has been gone into this. There'll be a reversal of onus regarding the granting of bail. I want to play a little bit of what Chris Minns said today at the press conference.
Now, this is a comprehensive package in relation to criminal justice reform. It's in addition to the $230 million of additional money the government announced 2 weeks ago for domestic violence prevention programs in our community, early intervention programs, money directly to not-for-profit organisations that are providing help and support to victim survivors in the community. Not everyone will support these changes, but we believe they do balance the rights of an individual and his or her presumption of innocence, as well as the right of a victim survivor to be safe from harassment, intimidation, or further assault at the hands of a previous intimate partner.
Your thoughts on what they've done?
Well, Chris, what will happen here is really buried in the detail, because it's not just reversing the onus on bail, but an emphasis now, a reliance on these electronic ankle bracelets for tracking would-be perpetrators. Now, there's a problem with the tracking in that in country areas in particular, community services can be looking at the tracking, but if there's no 24/7 police station, who does anything about it?
Yeah, and they've all been closed down.
Areas. And they say, oh, well, you can ring up the potential victim and tell them to flee. Well, where are they going to go? They go to a friend's or a relative's house where the perpetrator knows exactly where they are in a country town. So without 24/7 policing right across the state, the ankle bracelets can be meaningless. Useful. But I get the feeling the magistrates making the bail decisions will follow New South Wales government policy under the Liberals and now Labor of lowering incarceration rates, particularly for Indigenous, who have very high domestic violence rates. So what you're going to get are more of these community service orders, more of the ankle bracelets, but it's not a panacea. It's not a miracle weapon. Women here will still be vulnerable. The answer overwhelmingly is forget about ankle bracelets. If someone is at high risk of domestic violence offences and charged again, don't bail them out. Mm. Don't bail them out and put them onto the community with a bracelet or not. Mm. The safest way of keeping women safe, of course, is to make sure the perpetrators aren't on the streets in any shape or form.
If you've got form, that makes a hell of a lot of sense. But you've got to have form for that, because all of a sudden an allegation can turn into you not seeing your family, not seeing your children, and being stuck in a jail for a month.
Well, it's got to be an offence that's been charged, and you want the system to work through that quickly for people to have justice and have their matter determined without long court delays. But these ankle bracelets, they're not going to work in practice, particularly in country areas.
Yeah.
And the bottom line problem with domestic violence is the bipartisan major party policy of lowering incarceration rates, particularly in the communities that have the highest rates in remote Aboriginal areas. So as long as that continues to happen and the police see no point in charging people because of that policy and they see a softness in the judiciary, then we're going to have this domestic violence debate over and over again, and more spending. We mentioned open-ended spending. This is another area where it's well and truly out of control and not getting the results.
Yeah, it's not being targeted properly. This business about spending, you know, $924 million to give leave payments to women that want to leave violent homes. Who decides? How long is it going to take? Where do they go? There's no temporary accommodation. There's no caseworkers. Anyway, one quick one before we let you go. Donald Trump's fixer, Michael Cohen, has spilt the beans, as we knew he would, in New York yesterday, claiming that Trump directed him to buy the silence of porn star Stormy Daniels ahead of the 2016 election. We know he wants revenge. That was the title of the book he wrote. And he's a self-confessed liar. He's either going to bury Trump or he's going to be Trump's best friend now.
Well, I don't think the public care. I don't think the voters care. And the evidence is judicial attack on Trump from lefties and defectors is counterproductive. It's an own goal. Look at that rally that he had in New Jersey, 100,000 people. I mean, in a democracy, it's hard to get people out to vote, let alone go to a rally like that. I've never seen scenes like it. I think Trump is a beneficiary, and the more they attack him, the more support that he garners. So go the Donald.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Mate, thank you very much, and thank you very much at short notice commenting on what has occurred today with David McBride. We appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Chris.
Much appreciated. There you go. Independent MP in the New South Wales Parliament, Mark Latham, MLC, in the upper house. And just repeating, if you've just joined us, you'll hear more details in the news. But David McBride has been sentenced now, finally, eventually, 5 years and 8 months an incredibly severe sentence for what was being touted and expected prior to the sentencing hearing today. Just on Trump, very quickly, former NFL linebacker Lawrence Taylor over the weekend endorsed President Trump for the 2024 presidential race. There have got to be a few votes in those who love Lawrence Taylor. He said, I just wanted to say I grew up a Democrat and I've always been a Democrat until I met this man right here, Taylor said during the rally at Wildwood, New Jersey, the one that Mark Latham was talking about. Nobody in my family will ever vote for a Democrat again, he said. He welcomed Mr. Taylor, Trump did, to the podium, followed by former NFL running back Otis Anderson. Don't you just love that guy? I tell you, it's been a very exciting day, you guys. Not one person left here. You're still here yelling and screaming, Anderson told Trump supporters. He's got some very, very famous NFL legends on his side. Why not? It's a free country. Well, it was. We'll take this break. We'll go to news for you, get some more details on David McBride. We'll try and catch up with David Shoebridge as well in the next 20 minutes. And we'll continue our coverage of this quite astonishing sentence on David McBride, the Defence Force whistleblower. This is Chris Smith on TNT.